The 15th story, The War of Ambassadors' Beards. Questions which give rise to war among nations are of many kinds. This is the story of a war which arose over the ambassadors' beards. Over east of Jordan, among the mountains, lived some people known as the Ammonites. When the children of Israel were passing through the wilderness, they had come in conflict with them, and they had been enemies ever since. Now there was a new king on the throne of Ammon. The old king was dead, and his son reigned in his place. King David thought that since the Ammonites were such near neighbors, it would be well to keep peace with them and be friends. They lived just across the river, so David chose some ambassadors, the oldest men of his court who wore long beards, and sent them to the new Ammonite king with friendly words. These men were to congratulate the new king and ask him to forget the old quarrels they had had in the days of Jephthah. Saul had not treated the Ammonites very well, but David and the old king who had just died had been friends, and the ambassadors were to ask the new king that his friendship might continue. So the old men with the long beard set forth on their errand and journeyed till they came to Rabbah, the royal city of the Ammonites. But when the princes of the Ammonites saw them coming, they went to the new king and said, "Put not your trust in David. He has not sent these messengers here to honor the memory of your father, nor to make an honest agreement with you. He has sent them to spy out the weak places in our walls and to find out how many men are in our army. When he has learned this, he will send his soldiers to make war upon us." The king was young and had not reigned very long, so he heeded the advice of the men of his court, and when the messengers from David came, he treated them very badly. He cut off their long robes till they came only to their knees. Then he shaved off half of their beards, leaving each man with a beard on one side of his face and none on the other. Then he sent them home. In those days all men wore beards. It was a disgrace to be seen without one, and so ashamed were these poor old men that they hid themselves by day and traveled by night. When they came to Jericho, however, they sent a message on ahead to King David to tell him what had happened, and David was very angry, of course, to think that a king would so deal with another king's messengers, whom he had sent in good faith and with greetings. So he said to the messenger who had brought him the news, "Tell the ambassadors to tarry at Jericho till their beards are grown." Then he called his army about him and got ready for war, and this war has always been known as the War of the Ambassadors' Beards. The new king of the Ammonites was very much frightened when he realized what he had done. They had not forgotten their neighbors, the Moabites, how David, after he had conquered them, had made them lie down in two long rows and had then killed all the men in one row and had left the others. They knew very well how powerful David's army was, and that if he made war upon them, they would certainly be defeated. So they went to their neighbors, the Syrians, and offered them gold and silver if they would come and help them fight against David's army. The Syrians came, and when the army of David, with Joab as their leader, came up to attack the Ammonites at the city gate, the Syrians rushed out from their hiding place and fell upon them. Joab was hemmed in between two armies. The Ammonites were in front, the Syrians were behind. Joab divided his army into two parts. One part he gave to his brother Abishai and said to him, "Attack the Ammonites in front at the same time I attack the Syrians from the back, but let us watch each other. If I see that the Ammonites are too powerful for you, I will come and help you. If you see that the Syrians are too strong for me, come at once to my aid." Then Joab talked to his soldiers. "Fight like men," he said. "Do not forget that you are fighting for your king, for your people, for the cities of your God. Fight like men." Then both Joab and his brother fell to fighting. Abishai's soldiers drove the Ammonites back into their city and shut them in. Joab's army drove the Syrians back into their country, where they broke in confusion and fled. But soon they came back, more Syrians than ever. They were fine-looking soldiers, and they carried shields of gold, but they were not strong enough to conquer King David's army. They were beaten. Their golden shields were taken from them, and David sent them down to adorn his palace at Jerusalem. For a whole year, the war of the ambassadors' beards was kept up. The Ammonites were shut up in their city. They could not get out. No one else could get in. The people were starving, and finally, some soldiers under the leadership of Joab got possession of the reservoirs which supplied the city with water, and then they had nothing to drink. They could stand it no longer. They were conquered. Now, Joab had done all the fighting, but when it came to ending the war, he sent for the king. And when David had come, he said to him, "Thou, O king, not I, shouldst have the honor of dealing the last blow to the Ammonites." They opened the gates of the city and went in. In the temple of Ammon, the soldiers of Israel found a huge idol, the god which the Ammonites worshipped. On its head was a crown of gold weighing 140 pounds. In the front of it glittered and sparkled a large precious stone. David took the stone to put in his own crown, and the Ammonites became his captives. The kingdom of Israel was much increased by this war. David became a mighty king. His territory stretched away far and wide. In the east it reached to the land of the Philistines, on the shores of the Mediterranean Sea. To the west it extended to the sands of the great desert of Arabia. It reached northward to the country of the Syrians in the mountains of Lebanon, and southward to the Red Sea. Through the middle of the kingdom flowed the Jordan, and after the war with the Ammonites was over, there was peace and plenty in the land. These people of Israel, who had once been slaves in Egypt, became a mighty nation, and no other king ever dared to send back David's ambassadors with shaven beards. But alas for David, he began to think what many other men has thought, that because he was so powerful a king, he could do as he pleased and not be troubled about the consequences. One day, just after the news had come of the bad treatment the ambassadors had received from the Ammonite king, David was walking, as was the custom in those days, upon the roof of his house. He looked down and saw a beautiful woman drawing water from a well. Now, David already had several wives. Most of the kings in those days had more than one wife. When David saw this woman, he wanted her for his wife. So he inquired who she was and learned that her name was Bathsheba, and that she already had a husband who loved her very much, and whose name was Uriah. Then David did a wicked and evil thing. He stole Bathsheba and took her to his palace, and for fear that her husband would find out what he had done, he gave him a letter to carry to Joab, who was with the army which David had sent to make war upon the Ammonites. In this letter he told Joab that he should put Uriah in the thickest of the fight, where the danger was the greatest, and should then turn and leave him so that he would be killed. Joab did this, for a captain has to obey his king's commands. They fell to fighting fiercely. In the first attack, Joab's army was driven back from the city gate, and Joab had to send word of his defeat by a messenger to the king. He called the messenger to him and said, "When the king hears that we have been driven from the gate, he will be very angry. And when he becomes angry and asks you why we went so near, you shall look him straight in the face and say, 'Thy servant Uriah is dead also.'" So the messenger carried the news of the battle and the defeat back to David. Just as Joab had said, David was very angry and said to the messenger, "Why went ye so near the city gate? Did Joab not know that they would fire upon him from the walls? He should have known better than to get within reach of their arrows. Return at once to Joab and tell him." But the messenger remembered what Joab had told him. He looked the king straight in the face and said, "Thy servant Uriah is dead also." When the king heard these words, a change came over him. His anger disappeared. He spoke kindly to the messenger, saying, "Tell Joab not to be discouraged. Make your attack stronger till you shall overcome the city." David was pleased to hear the news that the messenger had brought. Uriah could not return from the war to make trouble for him or to take the beautiful Bathsheba from him. The king married her and thought he was very happy in the way things had turned out. But he was not happy. No man can be happy when he has done such a thing as he had done. His conscience hurt him whenever he thought of it. There were certain days on which the king sat on his throne of state and heard the complaints of the people and decided their differences for them. One day when he was sitting in judgment, an old man entered his presence and bowed low before him. This man was the prophet Nathan, and he said, "O king, what shall be done in such a case as this? Once there were two men in the city. One was rich and the other was poor. The rich man had many flocks and herds. The poor man had but one little lamb. He had tended it carefully, brought it up and fed it, and his children loved it. He fed it out of his own cup and kept it warm in his arms. And one day a traveler came to the rich man's house, and instead of taking one of his own lambs from his large flock for the feast, the rich man took the poor man's one wee lamb and killed it for the traveler." David listened to the story and was angry. He said to Nathan, "The man that hath done this thing shall surely die." Then Nathan looked in the king's eyes and said, "Thou art the man. Hear the word of the Lord God against you, O king. He saith, 'I anointed thee king over Israel. I delivered thee out of the hand of Saul. I gave thee the house of Israel and the house of Judah. And if that had been too little, I would have given thee more. Wherefore hast thou despised my commandments? Thou hast killed Uriah and hast taken his wife to be thy wife. Now therefore the sword shall never depart from thy house, because thou hast done this thing." David made no excuse. He knew that the prophet spoke truly. He knew in his own heart that no man, not even if he be a king, can disobey the Lord's commands without taking the consequences. The laws of God are made for kings as well as for men. David hung his head in sorrow and shame and said, "I have sinned before the Lord." But if David sinned, he repented and was punished. He loved the little child which was born to Bathsheba with a great tenderness, but it grew sick and died. One after another, his sons grieved and betrayed him. Yet after a while, his sins were forgiven, and it came to pass many years afterward that it was another son of Bathsheba who reigned in Israel after David. When this little son was born, because the Lord had forgiven him and his heart was again at rest, he named the child Solomon, which means the peaceful.